This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck, wasn't that his
name? Lizmark.
Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big butts play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Monday evening. And of course, weather is in the air, as always. Looks like it's about to start pouring here. It's been raining a little bit. I'm sure it's making its way up the coast. And of course, joining me as always is my PIC, the man that we weren't sure if he was going to make it tonight. He had some severe cramping, wasn't going to be able to come up on the show. They had to carry him off out of work. But he got it together, mainly because he's used to this. His cramps usually come once a month, right, Scott Criscola?
I wanted to take you to come up with that one. Good grief.
Not that long, actually.
JR, always a pleasure. But the air conditioning was on. That's a difference.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to talk about the great debate between myself and Andrew Riesch? Check out episode 8 of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, which will be coming up on placetobenation.com, and you can hear the debate that him and I had about it. I thought it was fine. He thought they should have stopped the game, et cetera, et cetera.
It's actually posted right now, so you can check that out.
There you go. Check
Pause
it out right
this
now.
And go listen to that, and then come back.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number... That's right. Took us, what, 3 years to finally be able to do it. It is, of course, episode... 316, which means tonight's topic?
Midgets playing basketball. Duncan, we don't need no fucking air conditioning around here.
That's right. JR, before we begin, I always like to ask how your weekend was, but I had a revelation today, it seemed. You know, in the annals of history, it's kind of like the beginning of WrestleMania 6, the annals of space.
The annals of history. Or is that later when we get to the era? No.
Yes. We both have huge matches tonight. There have been multiple mega powers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first mega powers was, of course, the original Hulk Hogan, Randy Macho Man Savage. The second mega powers was, of course, you and I on our epic beer pong run.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, I noticed a third mega powers was created. And that was between your daughter and Elmo.
It was. And then they exploded. yes, we went to
that. That was not seen on the clip, though, on YouTube. On Facebook.
She dropped the elbow on him, and then, you know. But we went to Sesame Place with Mr. Roger Morissette and his wife and their nephew, and we had a great time. We drove down past your exit there, down through the Jersey Turnpike, over the George Washington Bridge, and it was big because she's not a big fan of characters. You know, she didn't go really care for Santa this year, and Friday. She went up to meet Elmo. We tried to get her to meet Elmo because the whole thing we've been hyping going there. We get to meet Elmo.
Right.
And Cookie Monster's with him. and she was just wigging out. Like, she would not even go near them. So we thought she was still just afraid of all characters. So the next day we go back, and Elmo's alone, and she was all about going up to him. So it looked like Cookie Monster was the problem here.
Cookie Monster was the heel.
He was out of the way. So she was down with Elmo, and the video's up on my Facebook page. It's one of my favorite videos of all time. She's doing...
It's awesome.
You know, very hesitant, and then Elmo was great. He was playing along with her, and they were kind of mirroring. It was like the two doinks at WrestleMania 9. they were mirroring each other.
Yes.
And then she finally went up and hugged him. So it was good. It's a cool park if you have a young child. Not quite ready for Disney or anything like that. It's a good test run. It's a nice little area. I get to hang out with Mr. Brad Woodling and his wife.
Excellent.
On Friday night. They came out to dinner with us. Took us to, what's the guy's name? Oh, what's the place's name now? He's going to kill me. It's a name. Oh, Sandy. There you go. I said it's a name. We don't know if it's a guy or a girl. But Sandy's Beef and Ale. He took us to for dinner. We made quite the scene, of course. The kids were all just... like running on fumes from earlier in the day. So they were just running around and, Juliana is like dancing and standing by the doors. People come in and then Roger went to go get her. She wandered off to a booth. He comes back. He knocks a glass off the table. This smashes everywhere. So just a big scene all over by our table.
Sounds like Uncle Elmer's wedding on TNT.
It was. It was very close to it. I won't be surprised if Brad's not welcome back there since it's near his town. So. But yeah, it was a good time. We had a great time. Came back yesterday afternoon. Came home, went to Awake, cut the grass. So that was fun, driving 5 hours and then doing that. But we're settled back in today, ready to go for some PTB podcasts.
Oh, that's fun. Hey, what a great weekend. Now I have to go to Awake.
Yes.
We don't have to talk about it. Was it somebody I knew or no?
Just a family cousin. My mom wasn't even going to, she didn't really care because we were supposed to come home late last night. Mm-hmm. And we kind of called an audible, just trying to avoid beach traffic. We came back early. So I felt bad not going,
right?
Since I was going to be around. So we just drove right there, and I just ran in. So I was only in for a few minutes. But
All right. Well, I'm glad we had a nice weekend. I spent most of the weekend. Last Thursday to kind of start the weekend, I went out with my brother, had a couple cigars for our birthdays, watched Game 1 Spurs Heat. Saturday, watched the Belmont Stakes, and saw California Chrome fold up like a cheap suit. And then have the owner of the horse throw all sorts of terrible epithets and expletives.
Sounds like he fit right in on the extra point.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Get him on there.
That's right. You know, and he was right, too. No. And then Sunday, of course. But then I repented, of course, because Sunday was Pentecost. So
yes.
And I was at church all day.
What's your take on murdering horses if they lose?
Well,
I'm only kidding.
We need glue. No. So there you go.
Scott, also over the weekend, your competition up at the top of the human race got a little thinner. Alexander Image, the world's oldest man, died in New York City at age 111. Creeping up the ranks, buddy.
I just played Pinochle with him on Tuesday.
It's like Derek Jeter moving up the all-time hits list. This is you.
I was not going to say this, but I'm going to do it for two reasons. Number one, because it's funny. And number two, because I care about the quality of this show. Because
really?
It is the yes, of course I do.
Okay,
and I usually don't, because you need to make fun of my age to add to the quality for some reason. So I'm going to throw this out here.
Yeah,
you can chew on this for about 150 episodes. So I'm just giving you more material after that terrible joke at the beginning. I got in the mail today.
AARP,
an AARP card.
Yes, you're so old. I thought you got that when you get to your 50s. Now it's your 40s now.
Yeah,
nice.
I thought the retirement age went up to 70. My dad retired at 70, so your dad, Gazzo's got, what, about 10 years left, probably? 10 or 11 years left?
I really thought it was 50, though. When did it change?
I don't know. I'd love to retire. Jesus, I'd love to retire at 40. You make fun of me. Fuck, I'd love to retire at 40.
You're already retired.
I'm like Terry Funk. I just come back.
Yes.
I'm just going to unretire.
You'll retire, and then you'll show up in Encoding one day randomly. Oh, he's back.
With a pink polo shirt on and a yes. All right, let's get started. Enough of this tomfoolery. Okay. Oh, before we start, excited. I'm going to talk about this with the guys on this week's edition of Place to Be Nation's main event later in the week. Big news on the network. I have to talk about this now. In the continuing helping out growth of the subscriptions, it was announced today that you can watch the network on your Xbox One or Xbox 360 without needing a paid Gold membership, which is gigantic. I haven't had one in a couple years, and sure enough, I just downloaded it. I'm looking. I don't have anything playing.
This
but
Xbox Gold stuff is more confusing than Subway's coupon system that they have. All the shit just confuses me. You need membership to watch stuff. I mean, what What's going on with Xbox?
I don't understand. The whole premise of that was
PS3.
To...
I download the app, but I watch it. I don't get all these different tiers and levels.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I know originally the gold membership was this: you can play other people online, but then you needed it for like Netflix and for Hulu, and that got annoying. And then you needed it for the network. And I remember Ben Morse, Ben a couple times on the main event, complained about that. And now, WWE somehow worked out a deal, I guess, with Microsoft. So now, not that it really matters. I mean, people are going to have the gold subscription for their own uses anyway. And now you can watch the WWE network on your Xbox without needing a gold subscription. So you don't need a PlayStation account like to play online.
I don't know. I ain't got time to play video games, Scott. All right, I'm really busy. I wish I had time for that.
It's because you're too busy watching TV. God.
No, actually, I never really. No, you don't, because I used to play Madden online with Mr. Flanagan and my buddy Eric. We used to play, and I didn't need any kind of extra subscriptions.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's just Microsoft fleecing you for more money. Yeah, so in any event, you can watch. If you have Xbox 360 and you don't have a gold subscription, you can actually watch the network now, which is – that's huge. And I think a combination of that and then the UK subscriptions, which will be coming in probably 3 or 4 months, and Canada. Have they gone into Canada yet?
No.
I'm trying to remember. No.
Well, yes, but not legally.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, I know a few people we know.
Siphoning from our country like other stuff.
Yes. So you can watch it now without needing a gold, which is gigantic. All right. Okay.
Take that, Aaron.
It's time
George.
Now for the premise of the show this evening.
Hey, what is going on here?
You and Mr. Belding and I had some breakfast on Saturday.
Just a breakfast?
A breakfast. Yeah, I know.
About the pictures I've seen.
He would need more than one. Yeah, precisely.
Many breakfasts.
I told our good friend Mr. Stephen J. Sutton, who handles the
multiple
breakfi, to keep this place clean. It doesn't look too bad in here.
All right. Noma is breakfi
tonight inside the Vintage Vault. JR, let's be honest, a show that you and I have been looking forward to for a very long time to review.
Let's be honest, you are true.
Tonight, the comeback kid.
John Travolta.
Yes. Speaking of...
At age 42, The Comeback Kid. Had a great movie. Beautiful wife and a loving kid.
I thought that was with Matt Dillon. No, that was a Heartbreak Kid. Never mind. Was that the Cisco Kid? I don't know. Whatever.
It was the hottest movie in America.
All right. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, on the Place to Be podcast, episode Steve Austin, who coincidentally is not on the show. Maybe one of the five greatest pay-per-views of all time, SummerSlam 2002. Watching it today, JR, and you had watched it already. You were actually going one step ahead today. I couldn't believe, I mean, realistically, how loaded the show is.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because we talked about how, like, you know, loaded the roster and stacked the roster was earlier in the year. It really still is. Like, they have a lot of high-quality talent. Now, maybe top-level name-wise, it's tapered off a bit. Mm-hmm. But as far as pure talent and being able to build cards, I mean, Leto, too, may be the best they ever had.
It's got to be. Top to bottom. Because it's not just main... Because the main events... The mid-card is really what's the stronger part here. The main event is solid, but there was, you know, there was some experimenting going on in the main event. The mid-card, rock solid. And, I mean, pretty much the first... Almost every mid-card match on this show has something great about it. Whether it's the work rate, the storytelling, the characters, combination of all of them. And then we had an epic comeback that a lot of people never thought was going to happen. So let's dive in because it's just everything about it is great. August 25th, 2002. Live from the Nassau Coliseum. In Uniondale, New York, a.k.a. Long Island. And, J.R., I don't think we've done a history lesson on this building, because...
Have we been here since WrestleMania 2?
I don't think we've been here since WrestleMania 2, and we weren't doing the
we're too busy trying to corral the Silverback.
Yes. Yeah,
driving around in his camper, now 95.
His camper, yes. Oh, God. So, give us the sordid history of... the Nassau Coliseum.
Opened February 11th, 1972, the general contractor, Scott, Erwin Schleff... constructed for $32 million, which would equate to $180 million today. Mm-hmm. Capacity, 16,170 for ice hockey, 17,260 for basketball, 18,100 for concerts, 17,686 for boxing. Here are your tenants.
I can give you at least a few of them. Usually I never get any, but let me give you at least three. Obviously the New York Islanders.
Yep, 1972 till current. Mm-hmm. Well, till this year. They're moving.
Well, next year. Yeah, this coming season will be the last. The New York Dragons.
Yep, the AFL from 01 to 08.
Yep. The New York Nets played there during Dr. J's years in the late 70s.
72 to 77.
Yep. Those, I believe, are the only three that I could think of. I'm sure there's a couple more.
The New York Arrows of the MISL from 78 to 84. The New York Express also of the MISL from 86 to 87. A rarity. They have WrestleMania 2 listed here as a tenant, 1986. The New York Saints of the NLL from 89 to 03. And the New York Titans of the NLL in 2007. And my favorite from the RHI, which I read as Long Island Jews. It was actually Long Island Jaws, JAWZ, from 1996.
Today's poll.
We're going to leave. We can't afford the rent here.
Do you find a New York sports team named after Jews offensive?
Yes. Put a poll. Let's find out.
There's a poll. Okay.
What do you mean they don't send bagels at the concession stands?
I missed the dog match because there's no locks. All right.
Not the ones on the doors.
Is Barry Horowitz on this show? All right. Your attendance, you talk about it. Pretty close to a sellout, 14,797. Your buy rate, an even one, which is huge for a SummerSlam. We haven't had whole numbers for
Like the heat. I'm not going.
We haven't had a whole number for a non-WrestleMania in a while. So, and your announced teams.
Name's not Rick Schmier.
Who built this place, Mr. Schnoff? Your announcers, just like Vengeance, except this time they were more organized. On the Raw table, way in the back in the catacombs, good old J.R. Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. And at ringside for SmackDown, Michael Cole and Taz. Now, the difference here is, at Vengeance, they just split the card in half. And
right, like idiots.
Cole and Taz did half, and J.R. and King did half, regardless of what brand the show was, the match was. So that if they weren't on, Cole and Taz doing a Raw match, they really didn't know the storyline. And
right.
This time, they finally got it right. Cole and Taz doing just the SmackDown matches. JR and Lawler.
It amazes me that it took them four shows to get that figured out.
I know.
The most obvious setup of all time.
Stupidest.
But yes, and JR and King are now up in the back, Nitro style. One of Eric Bischoff's many changes since taking over as GM here. Yes. So.
I like
the build around the show, Scott. Very built on athleticism and change and something, fresh. And they really tried to mix it up here heading in.
Yes. And it's because of this card. I mean, on paper, I definitely remember on paper this card being, we were just getting so pumped because it was incredible. And the build, I mean, the one match, I mean, the main event was special because you had this newcomer and then, of course, the huge return. So just everything about this match was, this card was crackling. And then you built this great undercard to lead up to those two big matches.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about the show was perfect. And this crowd... the Nassau Coliseum crowd gets a lot of crap. They're usually considered not as energetic as, say, the Garden, obviously, or even Continental Airlines in Jersey. But they were, I mean, after watching it today, they were smoking all night long. So, national and international object. What are our Heat matches, JR?
We have Heat in the U.S. with Spike Dudley defeating Stevie Richards. Internationally, we saw Shelton Benjamin, a guy at OVW, defeat Crash Holly. Sean O'Hare, our old friend from WCW, defeated Justin Credible, and D'Lo Brown defeated Raven. Let's go through the rest of Steven Sutton's transfer center, roll call, and all the other facts. So here are our champions. Our undisputed champion is still The Rock. We have a new Intercontinental Champion. Chris Benoit defeated Rob Van Dam on the July 29th edition of Raw from the Greensboro Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
Our tag team champions are still the Un-Americans. European champion had actually been unified with the Intercontinental Championship, Scott. So the European Championship is no longer.
Mm-hmm.
And to merge those titles, Rob Van Dam defeated Jeff Hardy in a ladder match on the July 22nd Raw from Grand Rapids, Michigan. We have a new women's... I'm sorry, still the same women's champion, Molly Holly.
Yes.
And we have a new hardcore champion, Tommy Dreamer, defeated Crash Holly in a battle royal on August 20th. Sky, here's some notes on the European title. We've had 31 total European champions.
Mm-hmm.
The longest title reign, any guesses?
Bulldog?
Yes, 206 days.
Yeah.
Shortest? It's kind of an obvious one.
Trying to guess. Midian?
Rob Van Dam. He held it here and then was immediately retired.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I didn't think that would count. I was thinking when Midian found it in Shane's bag, but okay.
126 successful television pay-per-view title defenses for the belt.
Wow.
Any guesses who had the most European title defenses on TV?
I don't think it was Bulldog, even though he had that long stretch. D'Lo Brown?
Eddie Guerrero in 2000.
Really?
Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
You win the trivia contest, so good till next year.
Woohoo!
All right, transfer center. Brock Lesnar moved from Raw to SmackDown. Chris Benoit also went to SmackDown. Chris Jericho went from SmackDown to Raw. Christian went from SmackDown to Raw. Eddie Guerrero from Raw to SmackDown. Lance Storm from SmackDown to Raw. Paul Heyman went from Raw to SmackDown along with Brock Lesnar. Matt Hardy jumped to SmackDown, and Stacy Keibler moved to Raw. And if you remember, this was still during the open period, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's been closed off yet on TV. Some milestones. We had Raw past 480 episodes, Heat past 210, and the fledgling NWA TNA now had 10 weeks of pay-per-view in the books. We had an Australian pay-per-view, Scott. Quickly read the results here from August 10th in Colonial Stadium in Melbourne. Rikishi defeated Rico. Mark Henry and Randy Orton defeated Reverend Devon and Batista. Jamie Noble defeated Billy Kidman to retain his Cruiserweight title. Chavo Guerrero and Hardcore Holly defeated Billy and Chuck. Kurt Angle defeated Test. The Un-Americans retained their titles against Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio. Edge defeated Chris Jericho. Torrie Wilson defeated Stacy Keibler in a bra and panties match. And The Rock retained his title against Brock Lesnar and Triple H.
I have that on DVD. It is called the Global Warming Tour. And it was not a bad card. I got it was like $10 at Walmart or something, but a good little card.
The King and Jim Ross moved to the back on July 22nd.
Okay. All right. So nice job, Mr. Sutton, for keeping us up to date on everything.
Yep, we got some other notes that we'll hit as we move through the matches.
Yes. I'm guessing, let's see, summertime, you had Move Jet. We're getting to a crucial part in your life.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that, and I have it marked down for next week. We'll talk about it. I did not watch the show live, though. I think Jim taped it, and I remember going over, like, two nights later, like on Tuesday, and we ended up watching it. And it would be, I think, one of the last pay-per-views we watched together. Definitely the last. Well, we watched others together later on, but at his house in our old setup with the illegal box. I think this was the last show we actually watched on that.
Thing was melting finally. So.
Yeah, I think so. It was on its way out, but he had recorded this one. I went over Tuesday. We kind of rewatched it in full as if we were live.
Uh-huh. So there we go. Okay. Let's get started. Perfect spot for your boy on this night.
I always love how it sounds like you're going in and out of a bridge with the way your audio plays on the Buick there.
That's not a Buick. Yes, it is a Buick. Okay. We have a huge huge debut here, JR.
We do, sir.
Who is your boy taking on tonight?
He is facing the debuting Rey Mysterio.
About time.
No longer junior. From Chula Vista, California, suburb of San Diego. Going in there. He debuted as a wrestler on April 30th, 1989, at the age of 14, in a small church in Tijuana, Baja, California, Mexico. This is where Dylan McKay went to reside, I believe, on occasion.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Technically, he was too young to receive a license, but enforcement is generally low. He began a feud with Psychosis using the name Calibri.
That's good. He was too young to drive, but nobody noticed.
Yeah, no, okay. Well, I think he meant a wrestling license. Einstein. Oh, which is Spanish for hummingbird, Calibri. Mm-hmm. The feud, and I believe Criscolo's Spanish for the feud lasted several years, continuing even after Mysterio headed north to the United States. He would cut his teeth in the famous AAA promotion in Mexico before moving on to ECW in a nasty feud with his longtime rival, the aforementioned Psicosis. In a classic Mexican death match in November to remember 1995, he headed to WCW to be the centerpiece of their outstanding cruiserweight division, had a great feud with Eddie Guerrero, included an unforgettable match at Halloween Havoc 97, which was title versus mask. Mysterio would eventually lose his mask in a hair versus mask match to Kevin Nash at Super Bowl 9 in 1999. Ray would wrestle without the mask for the last 2 years he was in WCW. Mysterio was on the last Nitro on March 26, 01, retaining the Cruiserweight tag titles with partner Billy Kidman. He would pop up in the short-lived XWF for a while and then made appearances in CMLL in Mexico. WWE signed him in June, made his debut on the June 25th SmackDown, defeating Chavo Guerrero. Upon coming to WWF, Ray again put his mask back on, which actually caused him a little bit of trouble in Mexico, as donning your mask after losing it was considered to be a bit of a no-no, Scott.
Maybe they thought that WCW closed didn't count anymore.
I guess so, right? So here's some titles he's held. Former AAA Mexican National Trios Champion with Octagon and Super Munico. Former AAA National Welterweight Champion. Former six-time WCW Cruiserweight Champion. Former Cruiserweight Tag Team Champion in WCW. Three-time WCW Tag Champion with Billy Kidman, Conan, and Juventud Guerrera. Winner of the 1997 WCW Magazine Match of the Year, the Halloween Havoc match. Former three-time WWA World Lightweight Champion, WWA three-time Lightweight Champion. Former WWA Tag Team Champion with Rey Mysterio Sr., and former three-time WWA Welterweight Champion as well. Hmm. So very well decorated as he heads in here. And he had picked up a pinfall victory over Kurt Angle in a six-man battle on August 8th. The two would attack each other as the weeks went on, and Angle promised he'd make Mysterio tap out here at SummerSlam. So, Scott, right off the bat, let's not waste any time.
Mm-hmm.
The best Kurt Angle tights?
Oh, the candy stripers? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Better than the Mirror Universe blacks that we saw at WrestleMania 18?
Those were good, but these were just, I don't know, they seemed very streamlined. And he'd have them for probably through the end of the year, right?
Not all the time.
Maybe not that long. Yeah.
He does bust them out now and then. But yeah, they were really cool looking. They were very sharp and they really popped.
Yeah.
And it made him look like faster and sleeker for some reason, didn't it? Like it almost like fit him in this match that he was flying around. It was almost looked cruiserweightish.
Yes.
You agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Kurt's not a big guy anyway. I mean, he's, you know, he's probably 5'11", maybe 6 foot even, and what, 235, probably 240. So he's not huge anyway.
Right.
But boy, did he mesh. And that's why I think I was obviously not just for heel face purposes, but there was definitely a reason why they had Kurt in this slot. Because
I think
he's the kind of guy that can adapt to a guy like Ray that not many people on the roster that could bring the cachet of the match could. These 9 minutes are incredible.
Yeah, Ray was a big pickup for the Cruiserweight division, star power for that division. And I thought it was very smart to put his mask back on as well. I mean, him coming in without the mask kind of, I thought, would have hurt them. And, you know, not only just for merchandising to sell the mask, but just added back to his aura. Unique match on paper. Ray was flying at a great pace here, just so crisp and still moving around so great around the ring. Such a fast pace. Kurt went right for the ankle and uses his size to whip Ray around. Angle hit a great German at one point, and then he starts to bully Ray a bit, gets a little bit cocky. The crowd was super hot all over Kurt with the "you suck" and everything else. I love, too, that Kurt hit every move with authority. That was one of the, you know, he did that a lot in this year, but here especially because he was able to snap Ray around so much that he really was drilling him into the mat with everything. Ray was flying around great after the first heat segment, very crisp and fluid, like we mentioned. They get a really good near fall and a very stiff West Coast pop hurricanrana. In a slick finish, Kurt counters the top rope hurricanrana with an ankle lock, and Ray has to tap out. A red hot opener, and Scott, I want your take on this, where it lies on the best pay-per-view openers of all time for the company. Great showing for both guys, and no shame at all for Ray tapping out there.
No. However, I do want to ask you this. First off, well, let's ask the simple question. How much lower is it than Owen and Brett?
Yeah, it's lower.
It's definitely lower, but...
I don't know how much notches. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
Brett Owen had so much story behind it, and it's WrestleMania, and it was a lot longer, and it played into so much. I mean, yeah, it's probably a decent amount better, but this is up there. I can't think of too many other ones to this point. Now, many, you know, there's been so many pay-per-views since that all kind of blend together. I can't guarantee there hasn't been one since then. But I think to this point, it's definitely, I would say top three, maybe.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I don't think there have been many. There's a few. I think 03 might have one or two, I think. Maybe
Martel and Coco Beware.
Martel, yes. Paul Orndorff and Don Morocco.
Well, how about, did you think it was better than Rockers Iron Express?
They're pretty close.
Yeah.
Two different kinds of
to
matches.
To me, those are probably the top three right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how easily Ray fit into, because, you know, the WWE style of wrestling is different from WCW and even from Mexico. So Ray,
although
you
if
know,
there was ever a time though for him to blend in,
now was it.
To me, this was it. Like the fall of 02, summer and fall of 02 is when the product was at its most wide open as far as letting guys work unique styles.
Mm.
Like, I thought he had plenty of guys to work with at this point that really fit his mold.
I agree. And you'll see it from this point on just explode when SmackDown and Raw do become very defined rosters. You see a huge difference. And when we get into 2003, it really there's a huge gap between the two brands. Considering he hasn't won all of his matches, Curtis had a pretty good year in the ring. I mean, 01 was great. But this hasn't been too bad either. You know, he's had, I mean, the Kane match, eh. I mean, let's see, 02, he was in the Rumble. The Triple H match in No Way Out, eh, not
probably
bad.
Worse.
Yeah.
The Kane match was
Kane
solid.
The Mania was not bad. And then the back-to-backs with Edge are awesome. The Hogan match, obviously very, very good. The main event at Vengeance, awesome. And this match, I mean...
No, he's in a real, and it'll only get better from here. He's in a real, he's locked in right now. I mean, he's in a really good groove and probably doing the best work of his career at this point overall, just in the ring. And just seeing him adapt to Ray's style was fantastic, and they really blended well, great chemistry, and the crowd was just on fire for this match.
Yeah. So there you go, Rey Mysterio. What I wanted to ask was, you don't consider... I mean, it's not that big a deal, but I think it does need to be said since you talked about it a lot in late 01. Shouldn't Ray have gotten the win here?
No.
Similar to, or is, you don't equate Ray losing here to, say, RVD losing at No Mercy?
No, because RVD was like main event level, world champion levels of over. To me, Ray is now going to be more than cruiserweight division at this point. Okay. I mean, he wasn't ready to come in and be in the world title mix. Also, he's in there with a guy that's built up to be bigger than him in a different division than him. Like losing to Kurt Angle, who's like top, you know, four guy in the promotion in his debut in an awesome sprint, is just different. I mean, it's just different expectations. RVD came in like a rock star. I mean, Ray was over, but not like RVD. I mean, he just came in a whole nother plane.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So there you go. Great opener. Unbelievable opener. I graded it. When we get to rewriting this review, I'm definitely going to be regrading a lot of these matches. Great opener, and Rey Mysterio impresses on pay-per-view, but Kurt Angle gets the win with the ankle lock. Next up,
well, we actually head backstage here, Scott.
Oh yes, there's a lot of this. There's a lot of this action. Go ahead.
Yeah, Stephanie brags about SmackDown's quality. Bischoff was waiting for her in her office, and they decide to watch together to determine bragging rights. And this starts really what would become a big thing over the fall is the brand loyalty and supremacy. A lot of that back and forth as they're really trying to now build separate brands. I mean, since the draft has kind of been there a little bit, but with all the hullabaloo with Vince and Flair and the trading and the free agent period and everything else,
right?
Now is where we're really starting to build the different levels of loyalty with Stephanie and Bischoff kind of taking firm hold of their brands.
Mm. Definitely. And we'll see a lot of that banter. It really becomes a linchpin of the fall in terms of kind of the storylines connecting the two shows. All right. Next up, we have another probably dream match for one of these two.
For so long. You and me been finding each other for so long.
And the dream match would be a guy who a lot of people think had a pretty lousy 2002, but in the end really didn't have a bad 2002, and that is Chris Jericho. And he's taking on, as you can tell, the Shadow Dancer himself, and that is Ric Flair. Interesting build, JR, and I actually love the build to this show, to this match. Tell us what it is. What happened? How did these two get together?
729 Raw, Ric Flair wrestled The Rock in a non-title match. Speaking of dream matches. After The Rock won the match, Flair grabbed the mic to make a special announcement. That announcement had been rumored to be a retirement speech throughout the whole show, but before Flair could finish, Chris Jericho made a surprise appearance and pasted Flair in the face with a chair. The next week, Jericho announced that he had officially jumped to Raw from SmackDown, and later that night, Flair returned the favor by hitting Jericho with a chair to cost him a match with RVD. A week later, Jericho challenged Flair to a match here, and on the 8/19 Raw, Jericho's band Fozzy was set to play a live gig. After performing one song, Flair burst onto the stage, snatched Jericho's guitar, and smashed it on stage, and then knocked over all the speakers and stomped on the mic, and would eventually run Jericho off with a guitar. Earlier that night, Flair informed everyone that his important announcement was now on hold because he wanted to deal with Jericho. So, Scott, what did you love so much about this build?
Well, I like the drama that Flair could have been retiring. I mean, when he came in, it was more as a figurehead for the Raw brand and the feud with Vince. I don't know if anyone anticipated he was going to wrestle in the ring. His 2000 and 2001 in WCW was not great, and it's very hard to say that about Ric Flair in the ring. So I thought that, you know, he wanted this one good match with The Rock, which wasn't bad if I remember correctly. And then I thought that was it. So I think that the legitimate retirement thing could have happened. And I think Jericho cutting him off and just a guy that Flair, I think, would have really worked well with. And I think a guy Jericho probably wanted to wrestle at some point in his career. And I just thought it lent itself to what would end up being a pretty good match. Flair needed kind of a fire under him to kind of get him back in the groove. He had a pretty good match with Eddie at King of the Ring. And I'm trying to think, he didn't wrestle at Vengeance.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't wrestle at Vengeance. So
it's weird seeing him back to being kind of a guy in the undercard.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I felt like that the whole, that I remember that build that night. I'm thinking, wow, maybe this is actually going to happen. It just seemed like it because he hadn't, you know, when he signed with the company, it was more as this figurehead. And
was that the one where Fozzy bombed? Probably. I know they played a couple times. I thought there was one where like the crowd just like it didn't sound great, and like Jericho, I think, even said in his book how it kind of came off shitty the way they were performing. I forgot what it was about the performance. It might have been this one, I think.
Might have been. I don't remember when they did it again. Maybe in 03 at some point.
Yeah, they did a battle of the bands at some point with some other. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah,
remember it was like another band played in them.
Yeah, I'll have to check that.
Anyway, Jericho's still doing the angry character here, too. Still upset about kind of being screwed earlier in the year. Wrestling angry. His music side being played up more as well. They had the Raw concert, like we mentioned, and they were pushing the Fozzy CD, and he had his Don't You Wish You Were Me. Remember that song? That was like the big song.
Oh, God.
Coming up. Kept playing
it constantly.
Over.
Yeah.
So they're really letting him run. I wonder how much of that was done to appease him from kind of screwing him with the world title. So they said, all right, we'll push a lot of your music stuff. Flair's first SummerSlam match ever, Scott. Little fun facts for you there.
Ah, there we go.
Nice pop for Flair. Jericho re-energized a little bit with this feud, like you said, probably a dream match of sorts for him. So it got him a little bit jacked up to keep going. Ric Flair loaded a lot of chops. Jericho was really enjoying his assault, dancing and punching. A lot of basic stuff with Jericho talking trash during the match. Flair's offense was mainly chops, a nice back suplex to go at the lower back. Jericho actually got a figure four. And then it got reversed. Flair got it, and Jericho actually tapped out, which I thought was very odd booking. A nice win for Flair, but Jericho just reeling and falling into a black hole quickly here. Match was fine, nothing special, nothing bad, just kind of existed in a vacuum. What did you think of the match, and what did you think of the finish? Did you think Jericho needed this a little bit more?
Yeah, I think he did. But obviously, as we see over the next couple of months, he was going to get something where he would have got, he got this win back anyway, so I'm not that upset about it. It did lead to a good match. But But I don't think needing the win was a big deal. Flair, actually, to be honest with you, I almost think Flair needed it a little more to keep his.
You don't think Jericho tapping out to a guy who's pretty much been inactive doesn't look good after the year he's had? Clean. I mean, there's no weapons, no nonsense mixed in.
Well, there was the controversy over the tapping out, even though his foot was on the rope or his hand was on the rope, something like that.
I know Jericho was playing it up like he was kind of dicking around, but
maybe they could have changed the ending. But
it just seems surprising to me that this guy who's been was just the undisputed world champion has tapped out clean to a basic guy who's been portrayed as an old man. I was on the verge of retirement. Just beat him clean in 10 minutes with a by submission. This seems like an odd decision for a guy that's really just reeling at this point, big time.
That's true.
And he just lost to a rookie the last month. In his first pay-per-view matches.
Oh, that is true. I didn't think of that. He goes from losing to John Cena, a nobody, and now he loses to Ric Flair, who you might be right on that one. That's I think the logic there makes sense. You're right about that. I retract. I concur with you on that. He probably could have used a win. But like I said, though, I will say this, that as we'll see, and we'll talk about it next week, that he gets something or something. He gets kind of a little payback that allows for him to get it back from Flair. Maybe like a small package or a low blow, maybe a nut shot or something.
Even a DQ.
Yeah, maybe tap
into
the figure
four.
This
is a spot where a DQ might have been all right. But just
maybe
tap into
the figure four probably didn't fit. Yeah, no, you're right about that. But I, in terms of wins and losses, I don't think losing is that big a deal. I think maybe the way he lost definitely was unneeded. So Ric Flair gets the win, 10-22. And again, we're 2-for-2 on the night. Both fantastic matches. I don't think we go backstage to.
No, we do not. Not
we do not
a
go
few
backstage.
More
back to, yeah, not after a few more. Next up, another burgeoning feud. This is where this is where Kevin Kelly and I have to start butting heads again, because another case for a guy that I've just been pumping up endlessly in 2002, and that is Edge. After the feud with Kurt Angle and the little run with the tag straps with Hogan,
yep.
Now begins maybe the feud that officially, not that the Kurt feud didn't, but this might be the feud that actually officially validates him.
Well, this might be the one that shows he's here to stay, kind of. Like the Angle one was like, all right, yeah, anyone can have very good matches with Kurt Angle. Let's see you keep doing it. And I thought he was progressing nicely kind of through the ladder of stars. And Eddie was in a good spot here to help him progress, had reestablished himself as a player coming off the RVD feud and kind of reproving to us what he could do in the ring. So I thought this was really a good, pretty good matchup, a good feud for both guys. One for Eddie to show off him, his wares, and one for Edge to get himself over as well. Fresh feud, great pace early with both guys getting a lot of offense in. SmackDown clearly had the edge in athleticism. I think that's been proven here.
Yeah.
Eddie works the shoulder in and out of the ring. A very innovative, crisp offense. Nice leaping arm breaker from the middle rope. Really punishing the arm. He makes even the most basic arm work look vicious, I thought, Scott, throughout this match.
Oh, absolutely.
Edge did a nice job selling the shoulder during his comeback. Kept allowing Eddie to land shots in every time he'd make his comebacks. Great Eddie Guerrero drop kick to stop a spear. I like that spot. Edge gets his knees up on a frog splash. Gets closer, very close near a fall with an execution. And then Eddie hits an awesome frog splash on the shoulder, and I thought that should have been the finish to pay off all the arm work. Edge wins with a spear using his messed up shoulder, which docked it a bit for me. He doesn't really sell it either. To me, it shouldn't have been as effective because his arm was so banged up. Another big Edge win. It was impressive. A very good match with good selling until the finish. Eddie's game plans have been fantastic in this run. I thought this should have mirrored the Backlash match where he just picks apart Edge's arm and then finishes it with a frog splash. And I get why they felt Edge needed to win, but I thought if this feud was going to continue, that Eddie could have easily won, and it could have been justified based off the arm work.
Absolutely. They talked about the shoulder, and on the backstory, Cole was trying so hard to really put over the whole, this feud is all about jealousy.
Right.
Eddie is jealous of Edge's popularity.
Yeah, it was kind of stupid.
Driving Latino heat crazy. And Taz's like, yeah, all right. That was really funny. But yeah, the whole shoulder thing and working it over.
When he hit that frog splash, I was expecting that to be the finisher. Even now, watching it, I'm like, oh, that makes logical sense. Eddie hits this nasty frog splash on Edge's shoulder and pins him. I mean, Yeah, I don't. I think Edge would have looked strong there and losing, and it wouldn't have hurt him. And then instead he screws up and uses the bum shoulder, hits a spear, and wins the match. Just, I don't know. It doesn't really end up settling well. And what's up with Edge's feuds in this year have been very backwards. It seems like he always wins the first match, and then it goes backwards from there.
Yeah.
I guess the Kurt one he lost the first match, but the Regal one, he remember he went backwards in that one too. But.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Yeah, I wouldn't have been upset if Eddie won this match. But again, and I will continue to, you know, I'll battle with verbally with Kevin Kelly. Edge once again takes on a guy who's a little different than Kurt, definitely different than Booker, and definitely different than Regal. Eddie is a guy who, Eddie's kind of like Edge. He's kind of a hybrid. I mean, he's a high flyer, a little more than Edge, but they do like to work a mat-based style as well. Eddie likes submissions and kind of working, you know, grapple holds. And Edge, again, kind of just adapted with it. And it ended up being a really good match. We're 3 for 3 on this night. I'm not talking 5 stars, but we haven't had one stinker at all. And again, a case where Edge found a guy who, again, a different style, similar to Edge's, very hybrid, kind of a little of this, a little of that. And they worked great together, and it just gets better from here. Edge knows how to adapt match to match. You know, we go back to Vengeance 01. Everybody thought that that Regal match was a disaster. And it wasn't great, but it gave Edge a chance to learn, all right, well, Regal works a little different than anybody I've ever worked with. And then at the Rumble, much better. And then by No Way Out, the two of them were working extremely well together. Kurt Angle, same thing.
You think Eddie's been the in-ring MVP of this year?
Since he came back, how could he not? Now, he's also been the benefit of great opponents. I mean, he hasn't had to really work any stinkers.
Yeah, but I think he's carried, but he was the main man in those RVD matches. I think we watched those. It was clearly him working the blueprint on those matches.
Well, I'll admit to you that, and I've said this to you a couple times, that I'm not as high on RVD, no pun intended, on RVD's work as a lot of other people are. I feel like he's, and I know, I almost think noticing it now in modern day WWE with him here, I see it even more. Now he's older and, you know, he doesn't strike as hard as he did, you know, 12 years ago, but I don't know. His style was very kind of meander your way through till you hit a big spot. Meander your way through till, that's what a lot of people used to think the Hardys were like. And we'll talk about Jeff Hardy throughout the next few years, whether he may have worked the same way. Eddie is not like that at all. Eddie's a bridge guy. He's like, all right, I got a spot in about 3 minutes. Let's work to it. And
right.
Let's not just lie around and hit some weak chops and
right.
dawdle around the ring. He worked to that next spot.
Yeah, and it all makes sense.
Edge, yeah, and I think Edge does the same thing. I think Edge has been doing the same thing. Still has work
poor
too.
Poor man version.
It does. Yeah, he's slowly.
Eddie would not have hit a spear with a bad shoulder and won the match with it. I'll guarantee you that.
No. So
what Edge could have done if they had one of them went too, he could have faked the spear. You have Eddie bite on it, and then he rolls him up or something like that, you know?
Yeah, or hits that, whatever that sit-down kind of DDT
right.
thing.
Something
has,
like though. That, you know? And it didn't make sense for him to hit the spear with his shoulder that had just been worked on literally for, I mean, how long was this match?
11:47.
Yeah. So you go 12 minutes of him getting his shoulder punished from bell to bell, and then he hits a spear with it. It just seemed kind of stupid.
Mm. That is true. So looking at this card, the matches have been really good, but admittedly, maybe the endings could have been fixed a little, adjusted slightly, taking nothing away from the entire body of the match. Taking nothing away from that, the endings were probably could have been tweaked a bit. Yeah, it's funny how we've kind of exposed that a little bit tonight, particularly with the Jericho Flair match.
Yeah.
So Edge wins. You wonder why. I almost feel like, JR, that they're kind of going this old school, you know, Big Show route where let's have great matches, but make sure that the baby faces win. Because we're what? Well, Kurt at the beginning, I guess. After Kurt, we've had face and face back to back in matches where probably right. the heel could have used the win.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point.
Maybe to get a
I
cheap
think they're really
off.
Just trying to build Edge's resume up as well. I mean, they're clearly going, speaking of old school, they're clearly building him in an old school way.
Mm-hmm.
The old Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels template, right? Break up the tag team and then have him slowly work his way up the ladder
through
the ranks, right, with great opponents. And you slowly start to build up his resume and his talents as a solo star.
Next up, Do we have a Bischoff? There were so many of them. I don't remember when they were.
Nope, nothing here.
Nothing here yet. Okay. They do a little montage on our heel team here, which I thought was pretty funny. Can I be honest with you, JR? Did the upside down flag bug you?
No.
I guess it didn't bug me either. I was just curious.
No, I mean, come on. You've come this far. That's going to bother you in wrestling?
Those offensive Canadians?
Yeah, I mean, come on.
How dare they? What if we give them an upside down maple leaf? No. We're talking, of course, about your World Wrestling World Wrestling Entertainment World Tag Team Champions, the Un-Americans. It's a three-man team.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
Yeah, that can't be nearly as offensive as an upside-down flag. obviously, it's a three-man group, but the two tag champions are Lance Storm and Christian, still with the cheesy tights and the long hair and
this is the time he really could have
gay porn star mesh shirt. It's so bad.
This is really where he could have. He could have updated his look to maybe match Storm, you know?
Yeah. T-shirts were kind of neat, though. Taking on, finally, a team we've been waiting for to work together, and it's finally happened. That is, as JR played, the aforementioned Booker T. And finally, getting what he wants. Finally seeing them together, JR. Goldust been wanting this for so long. Finally, they're working together as a team. Booker's finally embraced being a happy guy, and they get a taste of a possibility of gold here as they take on the tag team champions. Now, did this match surprise you? I remember thinking as I was going, you know, I don't remember this match that well. I don't remember it being terrible, but I'm not expecting a lot. And it was really good. I think the Un-Americans... I think Christian and Lance Storm work really well together, and they dictated pace against two experienced guys. And I really liked it. I liked it more than I did when I watched it previously.
Right. Let's talk about the build just for a moment here. So the Un-Americans jumped to Raw from SmackDown along with Jericho on the July 29th Raw. It was upon this jump that JR began calling them officially the Un-Americans. Booker and Goldust defeated Storm and Christian on the August 12th Raw to earn a title match here, and Christian would pin Goldust in a six-man tag a week later. Shaw mentioned after Booker was super kicked out of the NWO by Shawn Michaels, he looked to his friend Goldust for some help in gaining revenge. Once the NWO was disbanded, Booker and Goldust remained a team due to some great on-air chemistry that had gotten them fairly over with the fans.
And this would be begin a very hot stretch for Booker. This is the a year after his in-ring debut against The Rock. Here he is, totally opposite end of the spectrum, way over with the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And people love Goldie anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the chemistry is awesome, and it completely revitalized both men. And I think as we go through the fall, I think we see Booker at his peak as far as being over with the fans. Mm. Him and Goldust were just in a groove right now, and the crowd was super hot for this match.
Yeah.
And just as the way they were kind of revitalized by their team, I think the Un-Americans has done the same for Lance Storm and Christian.
Mm.
I thought it was completely turned them around. I mean, two guys seemed completely aimless.
Absolute. Despised heels. So over.
And the tag division, Scott, we've been mentioning it, finally refreshed, right? I mean, after all the stuff we've been talking about in early 02, late 01 with the same teams, now we've finally have some fresh teams in the mix here. So new champions, new challengers. Booker and Goldust had great energy. The crowd was red hot for the USA, like you mentioned. Storm and Christian had a good heat segment on Goldust, who had top-notch selling, as always. A good quality old-school tag scheme as well, with the missed tag, good teamwork, distractions to maintain control, classic style, and it really got the crowd going. I thought it was a good kind of a trip back to old-school tag wrestling, away from the hardcore stuff we've been seeing for the last few years. Did you agree there?
Yes. Yeah. I thought the pacing was good. Are you seeing a change in style?
It's cool to go back to that old Southern tag formula that always worked so well.
Yeah, where you get the old, real heel dictating, really, jacking the fans up for waiting for the real hot tag and Goldberg. Goldust played a spectacular face in peril.
Oh yeah, he was tremendous. And then they have the Concerto misses that turns a tide. A good hot tag, ref bump, Tess comes in, and we get the retention of the titles. Do you feel that Booker and Goldust should have won here?
No. I think this was a case where I think Booker and Goldust needed to get hosed a couple times and start and kind of really, really get the sympathy over the top. Because I remember as this fall progressed, people were really getting torqued off that they kept getting hosed and kept getting hosed. And
right. And I agree. I mean, it would have been a little quick to cut Storm and Christian's title reign short here as well. But the crowd was, I mean, they were just ready to blow for Booker Goldust. I think this place would have exploded if they won the tag titles here. And you always, you get that feeling where you don't want to miss that window and have it not mean as much when it finally happens. I don't think they got there, but I think this is one of those times where maybe you call the audible. I don't know. The crowd was so into them. I think if they had a good tag team title win here, that everyone just would have went bananas for them.
It's possible. I mean, again, you flip a coin. Either way, Booker and Goldust win. Either they win here. Like I said, the Nassau Coliseum crowd was off the hook, and you get a new tag team champions. But I think the Un-Americans had a lot of life left as this heel slimeball, you know, sleazy team, and Booker and Goldie just could keep building. And I don't think they were going to lose any. I think they had maybe a four-month window.
Okay.
Five tops before you're like, all right, now it's getting...
Well, they had to be careful with, you can't have them lose.
That's my whole point.
Right. You can't have them keep losing. You just have to not have them in title matches, you know?
Right. You know, give them like a 4 or 5 month window, but maybe by the end of the year, you pull the trigger. So, yeah, I thought it was fine. I think the I don't think you should cut the Un-Americans off after just a month. I think they had more to give as well. And Booker and Goldie had a lot left in the tank. There were more than enough left in the tank to keep this going. So,
yeah.
No, I didn't have a problem with them. I didn't have a problem with the Un-Americans stealing the cheap win, thanks to their third member. And they gain members.
Yep.
Or they gain a member. Or is he an associate? Nah, we'll talk about it when we get there.
It's like Pillman and the Hearts.
I can't believe that. I gotta go back to that. I don't really remember that where they actually said that.
What?
Because remember, he is on that painting.
This is a fan drawing.
Well,
he never had the jacket. He didn't have the official Offer Nation jacket.
It's because he had the awesome. I do find it funny, though, that, you know, they were all Canadians, and he had the hammer and sickle on his tights.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
He believes in the all cause, right, like me. Yeah. We go over to the world, where Noble and Nydia, being very creepy, Nydia makes out with a random dude while Noble roots her on, if they're in some kind of, you know, homemade bang bus porn or something.
Yes.
Bischoff and Stephanie back in their locker room arguing over a women's place in the business, which got a little awkward at times, but yes. Stephanie arguing, of course, that women should be on top, and Bischoff arguing they should not be. So
yes, and I believe that segment was right under the Redwater account. All right. Next, we have our second title match of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
JR, the Intercontinental title on the line. Your champion, as mentioned in Mr. Sutton's stats earlier, Chris Benoit is your IC champ. Defeated former champion Rob Van Dam in earlier in the month.
Mm-hmm.
And now he gets his rematch. And wow. I may have to grade this match a notch up too. This might be one of my real honest to goodness favorite RVD matches. I have a lot of favorite Benoit matches. I don't want to get vilified like our good friend Joel Barnhart, but I do have a lot of favorite Quince Benoit matches. But this might be, as I was just talking about, that I don't like his work rate. I will say this might be one of my favorite RVD matches.
All right, well, let's talk about the build here. So Benoit defeated Booker T on the 722 Raw to earn a shot at RVD the following week.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit would get that assist from the ropes a week later and steal the IC title. Later that week, Stephanie McMahon officially announced she had signed Benoit and Eddie Guerrero to jump from Raw to SmackDown. Benoit showed up with the IC belt in tow, infuriating Eric Bischoff. On August 15th, Stephanie McMahon chastised her new assistant Dawn Marie for handing some important papers to Stacy Keibler the week before, because it turned out Stacy was a mole for Bischoff. The papers were a copy of RVD's contract that showed he was due for a rematch. Once the papers made it to Raw and Bischoff, the rematch was set for SummerSlam. Stephanie was upset because she wanted the IC title to remain on SmackDown, and now the two brands would be battling for it at SummerSlam to see which show it would end up on.
Of course he was due for a rematch. But I mean, so of course he was due for a rematch.
If he doesn't see this paper, he'll never know.
Like, Bischoff's a dope.
He doesn't have 40 years worth of wrestling history to look back at.
Yes, even though she was only 25 or something at the time. 1630. They gave this a lot of time. And they just pummeled each other in this match.
Yeah.
It was awesome. I don't think anybody ever... Historically, the kind of opponents RVD usually had weren't like Chris Benoit. Guys are
right.
Really stiff strikers and just crank you over and everything. I mean, he doesn't face guys like that, but he adapted. He hit. It was about the hardest I had ever seen him hit opponents, chops and forearms and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was not like his usual, you know, cream puff punches he does before he does some move off the top rope. Not like that in this match. Benoit drove him to equal his intensity.
Yep, and Benoit's push is right back on track now after a couple of months of getting his feet wet again. Yeah. Becomes a stud on SmackDown immediately after he jumps. Dream match on a big stage. It's a promotional match presented as classic and build. A sick release German from Benoit where RVD is folded up on his neck. Benoit controls most of the match, grinding RVD down. Benoit gets a busted lip from a vintage RVD potato. Mm-hmm. Benoit misses a headbutt. RVD misses the frog splash. I thought the crowd was a bit quiet here, but a buzz. Like they were ready to explode.
Yes.
It wasn't silence, but you could kind of feel them getting into the match.
Waiting. Yeah.
RVD survives a crossface, and then you get a long heat segment by Benoit. RVD fights out of a second crossface, and the crowd started getting to it there with the teases from RVD. Benoit kept punishing the shoulder, and a fantastic performance, like you said, from Benoit. Counters, reversals, transitions, offense that all made perfect sense, similar to Eddie's earlier. RVD breaks a third crossface, methodical dissection, hanging in the balance, moving into a slow RVD comeback, hitting all the usual offense from Benoit, but not as a breakneck speed for both guys, actually, from RVD as well. I thought he hit all his usual offense, but not at a crazy pace, like you mentioned. It fit with Benoit's pace. Mm-hmm. Good selling from RVD. Hits a great frog splash for the win. Benoit dominated, and RVD looked like he was just trying to hang around and steal the win, what he did. Fantastic match, paid off all the hype. Hard fought, good win for RVD. Scott, do you think this is one of the few matches here that came in at the IC level? You know, we've talked about ones in the past, like Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels, and other matches that everyone was all hyped for and couldn't quite match Jeff Hardy and couldn't quite live up to that hype. Do you feel like this one did?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, everyone was amped for this match when it was announced.
Yeah. Yeah, and boy, did it deliver. It delivered.
I was blown away, too, when I watched it again. I think this is one of the ones I watched with Dan last weekend. Mm. And we were like, oh, my God, I didn't remember this match being so good. And it just kept going. You kept thinking RVD was going to come back, and Benoit cut him down. And like I said, RVD's offense has blended nicely in. He wasn't haphazard or flying all around. He was very in control and kept the pace with Benoit. And I thought it was really well worked.
I knew that. I mean, you're dealing with RVD, who, like I said, I mean, he's a good worker, you know, in terms of finding the hot moments to hit his big stuff. Sometimes his in between stuff's a little weak. Not in this night, but here's a guy, Chris Benoit, who's been cooped up just like Triple H was through the rest of 2001. Chris Benoit, same way, even longer. He's just itching to you know, work great matches, and I think the whole. Here's a guy, like Eddie, I think, where the brand split is fitting him perfectly.
Yeah.
SmackDown is seems like the younger brand with not as many huge names. So it's a good chance for the SmackDown guys to really carve out their niche as to what kind of show SmackDown was going to be. And Benoit was the poster boy for that. And we'll talk more about the little click, no pun intended, of wrestlers on SmackDown, and we'll give you their nickname in a couple shows. But Benoit just was so pent up. I think he needed a good opponent at SummerSlam to really get his juices back again. Because I didn't understand. We talked about it at Vengeance. You know, the whole tables match where they beat the snot out of Bubba Ray and Spike, and then they lose. same thing here, but this was different. Because Benoit had other things coming up, and you know, they need to get the belt off him. But that didn't matter. This was a stellar match.
And again, it shows just how loaded this mid-card is. That you can just, you can traipse these guys about into different feuds, and they all blend in perfectly. We've seen RVD and Eddie. We've seen Benoit and RVD. Benoit and Angle and Ray. You know, they all keep moving from feud to
Angle
feud.
Angle Edge, Eddie Edge.
Exactly. Yep. And they all just blend in well, and they all have great matches in the undercard, and just shows you how stacked the roster is at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And everyone's healthy, too, for the first time in a while. But outside of Austin, everyone else, all the other guys are here.
This is kind of similar to like a lower, not lower level, but a secondary paper. Well, I can't even say that either. How do I word it? A SummerSlam version of WrestleMania 17, where just everything's clicking.
Right.
Obviously on a slightly smaller scale, but still. Just match after match after match after match. And we're 5 for 5 so far in various qualities. We're not talking about 5 for 5 five-star matches. Those are coming in a minute. But 5 for 5 where there's something engaging in every match, whether it's the work rate, whether it's the characters, the build, the crowd. Something is hooking you into every match on this card so far. And that's amazing. And Rob Van Dam, what, fourth time this year? Third time? Fourth time this year, I believe. I'll have to ask Mr. Sutton. World Wrestling Entertainment Intercontinental Champion. Let's see, he won it at one. Yeah, three. Won it from Regal, lost it to Eddie, so that's one. Three, yep. Because when he beat Eddie, he lost to Benoit. So three times since March, he has become Intercontinental Champion. So big win for Rob Van Dam. Okay, now we go backstage because obviously Stephanie's pissed and Bischoff is dancing the jig that his guy has the IC title. But then they start jaw-jacking, and then out of nowhere, Stephanie just starts cackling and walks away.
Yes. Cackling like a Jordan Duncan nightmare, Stephanie cackling.
That's exactly right.
But yes, it was a weird tease. You kind of wonder what Steph had up her sleeve that would make her giggle so much.
Yes. Okay. Up next, continuing with the Un-Americans, the muscle of the group. And that is, of course, test. This is a test. Although I weren't using that theme now.
No,
I was using the Un-Americans theme.
<That's
right. laughs> Although, I was like, taking on, now, former WWE Undisputed Champion, losing the title just 1 month earlier, and that is, of course, the American badass himself, The Undertaker.
Mm-hmm.
He was a heel when we left Vengeance, JR. What has happened since?
Well, the July 29th Raw, the Un-Americans quickly made their presence felt by jumping The Undertaker after a match with Chris Nowinski. After taking Taker out with a concerto, Test grabbed a mic and announced, "Here lies your American badass." After avoiding Taker and landing a couple of cheap shots, including a win over Taker in an 8-man tag, Test officially got his goal accomplished, to goad Taker into a match at SummerSlam. And on the 8-19 Raw, Taker came out, talked about his ties to America, his love of his country, and basically turned himself face in the process. Now, that process had begun with all the respect stuff coming off in June and July with Jeff Hardy and everything. And the crowd was cheering for him. The heel run had done its job, right? It had gotten him to the point where he could be a top guy again. It had gotten him into shape, had some great matches, had re-energized him. And now we're back to, you know what? The crowd just does not want to boo this guy. We've done everything we can, and he's back to just being a face, but in a completely different spot than he had been. So here he is, and it made sense to put him in this feud. He had been, like we said, the American badass, so why not have the Un-Americans go after him?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, we talked about at King of the Ring that the whole window of Test being a major player probably had run its course. But would not be JR's job if he was not saying over and over again, at some point in the near future, Test will wear significant gold. I think he said it twice. So they still had that thought in their mind, unless they were just trying to add some sizzle to the match. This may be the only match on the show, as entertaining as it is, where you're like, all right, that was okay. I mean, I don't know how much you were totally going to expect out of it, but
pretty big spot, though, for Test and the Un-Americans here.
Yeah.
Kind of their first big challenge. Like we said, Taker was bound to become a face again at some point. Uses his power and experience. Still, Test uses the ref to bust up Old School and turn the tide. Test slows it down. Storm and Christian interfere. Taker fights them all off. Wrecks all the momentum from earlier. Great Test near fall in the big boot. I actually bought that one. I thought he was going to get the win there. Test tries to use a chair. That fails, and the tombstone hits for the win. A decent match, like you said. Not bad, just kind of there. Test and Un-Americans could have really used a marquee win. It's tough to say Taker should have laid down here, but I feel like you built up all this momentum with Storm and Christian, and then you have Taker just beat the shit out of all three of these guys in that one spot, and then they fail. So I don't know. I don't know where else you go with this. I guess Test losing is okay, but they really could have used like a big-time win to really get the group over, I thought. And Taker celebrates with the flag after the match.
Yes. Yeah. The match was good. I thought Test, 8-18, Test busted his tail.
Well, he has been. He's had a good year.
Yeah.
And it's good to see him evolved here with the Un-Americans. I thought it was a good fit for him because he always kinds of trend with these renegade groups. But And he's always best, I think, in a faction. We saw that with the Corporation. We saw it with the Alliance. He always seems to kind of TNA. Fit in well with them. Yeah, TNA. I feel like this could have really put them more on the map. But even maybe if they do Storm and Christian, I hate to advocate for so many DQs, but even if you do Storm and Christian get involved and then it's a DQ and then Taker tries to fight them off and they beat him down, something like that. I feel like just Taker swatting them all away and then pinning Test was like, oh man, we're not getting back to the old Taker now that he's face again, are we? Kind of thing.
Yeah, I know.
The like, can he not show any ass now because he's a face, you know?
Well, that plus, obviously, I hate to keep looking ahead, but
right, yeah.
I think a lot of the reasoning here is because of the future.
Yeah.
And Taker's got something coming up. That there's something planned for him, and we'll obviously get into that next week at Unforgiven. So you don't want him to show ass here and then have to, you know, and then eventually what they do, it makes no sense whatsoever. Speaking of a great match, JR, on Studio B here, one of your favorite matches of all time is on the screen, and that is the rematch from the finals of the 1990 Intercontinental Title Tournament. Well, Mr. Perfect versus Tito.
Fantastic match.
On Saturday's main event. I understand you're thinking you want to pump the Un-Americans up, maybe not have this match, maybe have Taker fight somebody else, but who's he going to fight? Considering what they had, what he was going to be set for starting maybe
right.
What, 2 weeks later.
Yeah, he couldn't have losing the test.
So Taker wins, but again, I mean,
it's fine. Test is test. I mean, whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, it was good though. The guy worked his butt off, and they had some good power moves. And I mean, it's not. We get the first match of the night where it's like, it was all right. It wasn't as good as any of the first five,
right?
But it wasn't bad.
No, I mean, if this is your worst match of the night, you're doing fine.
Exactly. All right, we just motored through six great matches. Why don't we take a break? Because we got two doozies coming up next. Okay. First off, some words. Because.
Oh, I need an intermission to go get a kosher pickle. I'll be back.
I think they're out of Canisius near the concession.
No, could you?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that? Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com. In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith Blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lauer. I'm on The Place to Be. You're listening to The Place to Be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama says, it be that way sometimes.
Well, I met this lady and I told her quite a story. Said I love her forevermore. But the trouble is I tell the same old story to every girl that walks through the door. You said the snake start talking at your honey.
Do you think Test is circumcised? I don't know.
Morty, you got to get t-shirts that are bigger. They're going to shrink in the washer.
All right. We are back reviewing SummerSlam 2002 from Long Island, New York. PlaceToBeNation.com. Chad Campbellhead is previewing up today for this show. Looked at Ray and Angle, which we talked about in great length earlier. Can get Chad's take. A new episode of The Extra Point, Scott. You want to give us a quick 3-second review there?
Well, Dr. G's
time's
internet.
Up. Oh, G's here.
No, Dr. G's internet was struggling, so it was. I went solo. Andrew Reich talked NBA Finals and a little Clippers economics, and then Joel Barnhart with his usual baseball segment. So.
Cool. Movies of the P2B generation continued on with 1977. We saw 1976 last week, and that if we started with, well, Steve will explain the whole thing if you want to go back and listen, but we started with the oldest member that was involved in this project. That was Steve with 1976, where he was
born. So there's a reason why they didn't ask me?
And the group, well, you didn't throw your name in the hat. Could have started in 1952.
Well, or, you know, the League of, what is it, Birth of a Nation.
Well, the Charlie Chaplin films could have been on there.
Yes.
And for each year that they're going through, they're picking their 5 favorite films from that year. So
The 77 cool. article is fantastic. Highly recommend it.
Jeremy Nichols, House of Horror, looked at Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. We had a new episode of The Kings of Sport, Episode 64, talking about the NBA Finals. Stephen Sutton had his weekly honor report up over the weekend. New episode of Richard and the Mailman, looking at crazies, guns, and sexism. Josh and Andy tackle the intertwined issues of Elliot Rodgers' killing spree. Matt Petticord had his SmackDown review, Ryan Everett with his main event, And I think Dan McGinn's officially retired from Superstars. I told him, once you miss that one, you're done. New episode of the Still Real to Us show, episode 225, with the crew there, Jeff Peck and his boys. All-time May pay-per-view card, Ben Morse created that, of course, to compare to the one we put together, Scott. And we gotta have our new one coming up soon here, I think.
Yep, August.
July, August. Russell Sellers, five reasons to make your image. Spend a lot of time and money with the big two, but why? Why not look at other companies as well? FIFA World Cup 2014 preview, looking at groups G and H. Steve Carino Show, episode 7 with C.W. Anderson, was up over the weekend, as well as the new Bauer Show. Scott Keith's NXT rant from June 5th. And, of course, you can go back to the part one of the Giant Size Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast with the whole comics crew. Part two should be up soon as well. Andrew Reach had an awesome piece up on the agony of three-peat.
Yes.
As the Miami Heat try and go for a three-peat, a rarity in NBA history. So he looks at all that. Mike Mayers looks at the turn of Seth Rollins and the breakup of the Shield and what it means for the WWE. Anthony Estrada reviewed A Million Ways to Die in the West. Doesn't seem like he was too big of a fan of it. And, of course, you can go back to last Wednesday for our last episode as well, reviewing the January 25th and February 1st, 1993 episodes of Raw. So visit PlaceOfAviation.com many times throughout your day. Info at PlaceOfAviation.com if you have any questions. Twitter, Place Number 2B Nation as well. That be it.
Good Fantastic. Start.
That be it, my
That
good
be
friend.
It. And then later on this week also, Dan McGinn and I will do our big double live last two episodes of Legends House as well. So,
you know, it's funny. You go away, and I completely, like, forgot about it. Yeah, you get thrown off your routine completely.
Yeah, I know. Well, we missed it this week, but we were both very busy, and this is the end of the, I think the finale is this Thursday on the network, so we're waiting for that to do it, and then him and I are going to do a double whammy for episodes 9 and 10.
I need to watch that one. I'm behind a VP. Yeah, I get all thrown off. I forget about my routines, you know.
Okay. Let's dive back in, though, to the Nassau Coliseum for Morty and Jaime and SummerSlam.
Time to play the game! It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Speaking of circumcised.
Well, where do we begin here?
Yeah. So we last left this dynamic duo. Things were very different at Vengeance when Triple H had decided to go over to Raw to create some hijinks with his former DX pal, Shawn Michaels. Things went haywire, though, Scott, the next night. Eric Bischoff, nervous that the old DX buddies would take a show over, tried to force a wedge between them by asking Shawn Michaels to be Triple H's manager, knowing that Shawn would decline that and Triple H may get offended. They exchanged some interesting looks, but later in the night they came out in full DX music, t-shirts, and pyro. Triple H did the old school, let's get ready to suck it. Scott got down. When he turned around, he pedigreed Shawn Michaels to the shock of the crowd. The next week he said that he and HBK were not really friends and that they used each other to get to the top. Suddenly, someone came out and whispered something in Triple H's ear. He went to the back, to the garage, and found Michaels on the ground in a bloodied heap next to a car with a big bloody hole in the driver's side window. Very reminiscent of the snow in 1998.
Yeah, so I was about to say, second time that's happened to Sean.
Triple H said he would turn over every stone until he found out who did this. 2 weeks later, on August 5th, Shawn Michaels and Triple H had a face-to-face where Michaels showed camera footage that it was indeed Triple H that had smashed Michaels into the window. Triple H does the classic shot where he spits the gum out, looks at the camera, and smiles in heel delight, saying Michaels was weak and not a showstopper anymore. Michaels says the doctors told him he would finally be ready by, say, SummerSlam to have a match. Triple H wanted the match, but Bischoff said with all animosity behind it that the WWE would not sanction it. So they made it an unsanctioned street fight, and it was assumed that this would be Shawn Michaels' one and only final match coming out of retirement. Mm-hmm. All right, first question I had for you, Scott. Mm-hmm. Were you disappointed the DX thing only lasted like minutes?
Hell yeah, of course. I
like, did devastated. You think at the time, almost like a light version of the ECW turn with the invasion and everything, like, wow, they blew through that quick. Like, do you think they could have done like a month of the DX stuff and then Triple H turned on him, or do you think it would not have been as effective?
Well, I mean, if they wanted to have it by SummerSlam, then they needed to do it maybe a week. But
I mean, I guess the thinking is it was Triple H's plan all along was to turn on him. So why would he wait more than 2 minutes? I mean, why wait a week unless something happens in that week? I mean, the idea here, I guess, that they put across is that Triple H is a dick and wanted to just beat up Shawn. So,
Yeah, I mean, it was. I remember the moment when they came out. I was going bonkers. Like, wow, this could be really cool. But then I thought to myself,
that should be me.
Well, that, yeah, he wouldn't have turned on me. I would have been his manager. Would have been no arguments. But then the pedigree, and I actually stared at the screen.
Manager? I can't pay anyone else.
We already got to pay the accountant. I was a little devastated, and then I said to myself, something good will come of this. And, I mean, it was evident that the Triple H face turn had run its course.
Big time.
Probably through no fault of his own, just other crap was going on in the background.
Yeah, it was done. I mean, if you weren't going to do this, a team with Shawn, then it was done.
Yeah. But was there a better moment in wrestling for you than Akeem and Lederhosen? Just like this episode of Saturday Night's Main Event.
Definitely not.
I didn't realize he was still around in October.
All right. Anyway. Do you know how long it had been, Scott, since Shawn's last match at WrestleMania 14? How many weeks?
Weeks? Oh, I remember the days.
It was 4 years, 4 months, and 27 days.
Yes, and total number of days, JR said. It was like 360.
Well, it's 230 weeks.
Yeah, so it was like 1,200 and something days since March 29th, 1998. But of course he did end up wrestling one match that no one ever saw.
Right, Venom.
And with Venom.
Was that his name? The guy he wrestled?
At his camp?
Yeah.
I thought it was somebody else. I thought it was, what's his name? I can't think of his name.
Venom.
Wasn't it Cade? Oh, no, it was Venom then. Okay.
Yep.
And that was
April 4th, 2000.
2000. I knew it was 2000. Wow, so it was 2 days after WrestleMania 16. Mm-hmm. That's pretty funny. But that one, you know, nobody knows about. That was only
Jim Price was through the roof for that match and for this one. Yes. Did you ever think it was going to happen, or had you kind of given up hope that Shawn would fight again?
Well, like I had said at King of the Ring.
All right, well, I guess since his return, you kind of figured something may go down.
Yeah.
Okay, so pre-April, would you ever have expected this?
No. No, because I think I had said at Vengeance that I don't remember there being any scuttlebutt about it on whether, you know, Wrestle Chat.
Right. No, I agree.
Online. I don't remember any print about Shawn. It was all Hogan the first 6 months of 2002.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think there was much. He kind of came back under the radar, to be honest.
Yeah.
A surprising feud. Great build. Long-awaited return. Never thought it would happen. Hunter back to being a heel where he fits best. After the car attack, you wonder, would Shawn be written out again like 98? Mm-hmm. Did you think that at all? Or did you think once they did that, he'd still be? I kind of thought that maybe he wasn't ready yet, and they were going to wait longer. Like, when they put him through the window, I thought maybe he would be gone for a couple months and maybe come back, like, for Survivor Series. I didn't really expect them to come back a couple weeks later for SummerSlam, because they made it seem so violent again.
I wasn't sure, but I had a feeling that with SummerSlam coming up, if this was in between any other pay-per-views, then I would agree with that theory. But with SummerSlam coming up, I had a feeling that that it was going to happen here. I did. They were blowing through other stuff, so. Yeah, I thought that was set up for this. I think they just wanted to make it really put over the whole non-sanctioned despise each other thing. That's what I think they did.
I guess I really wasn't, like, it was one of those things I need to see it to believe it, that he was going to fight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Still not set that he ever wrestled again after this. It was really built as a one-time match to make up for his final 98 match when he didn't know it was it. So it almost felt like, okay, he wanted to have one match and he knows it was it. He wanted his kids to see him wrestle. or son, and that was going to be it. One-time thing. Sean still felt like the old Sean here. Remember you mentioned that at Vengeance, how he felt kind of 97-ish Sean? I thought he felt like that here, too.
Yep.
He hadn't crossed over yet to what he'd become. A big reaction and moment for him.
Oh, Hunter, my God. Him coming down the ramp. I just got to preface this, though. Him coming down the ramp. Even today, watching it. It just felt right, you know?
Yeah.
Nassau cool. crowd was pumped.
You never thought you were going to see it, so it was really cool. Hunter's clean-shaven, which is weird to see, but it would kinda, it helped set him up as different, as we'll see
made
over the next
few older,
weeks.
Made him
look
older,
It did make him look older.
Made him look older.
And a little fatter. Sean comes flying out of the gate, letting loose. He didn't look hesitant at all, which was cool to see. Question was, how much Sean could Sean be? And he kind of let loose and show that he could be Sean. Did you think Hunter should have worn jeans?
Yes.
I think Sean's out there in cowboy boots and jeans, and it's a street fight, and Hunter's out there in his little tights, but kind of weird looking. Hunter starts in on the back, and everything looked and felt vicious. A lot of cringe-worthy back spots at the time, because remember, we still thought Michaels was like, oh, how healed is he? I remember being very jumpy in this match. Like, are they going to kill him? Are they going to bust his, you know, is he ready for this kind of thing?
Those backbreakers were vicious.
Oh, just laying him in.
He was bending him backwards.
And the chair shots to the back as well. Just a brutal attack. Everything felt like death, every move. Michaels hits a gusher. Hunter uses a belt to whip him. And Sean was just taking a crazy beating. Sean had some fantastic selling. Hunter goes to the back anytime Sean found any kind of opening. Sick backbreaker onto an open chair. That was maybe the grossest move ever when you factor in the context of it. Where Sean's back, how far he had come, and then does a backbreaker to an open seat of a chair. Michaels hits a low blow to stop a pedigree in a good desperation spot. Hunter hits a gusher as well. Epic feel here. Sean realizes now he may have an opening, and they put that over in commentary when he sees Hunter bleeding and he starts to make his comeback. It's like he realizes, oh, shit, I can actually win. Mega pop for Sean's nip up. Michael's cut is completely stopped bleeding, which I thought was funny. Shows he's kind of out of blading practice because he had pretty much completely stopped
dried
bleeding.
Dried out, yeah.
Sean uses Hugo Savinich's boot for a really stiff shot there. Sean gets his payback from earlier with tons of stiff shots. It felt a little bit long at this point. I thought they could have cut out the parts of the ladder and Triple H comes back into control. I thought the 5 minutes before the finish, or maybe like 3 minutes, I felt a little bit superfluous at this point. Everything was well executed. Everything looked legit. A table spot was unneeded, but Sean was going all out because it could have been his last match. Crowd loses their shit when Hunter blocks Sweet Chin Music and teases the pedigree, but then we get the roll up and Sean gets the win. A true war fitting for his return. Great story. Long, awesome Triple H post-match out of nowhere, hits him with the sledgehammer, and it leaves the door open for another Sean match if he could pull it off. Sean gets carted off, and Jim Ross is out of his mind with the call on this one. So, a couple questions. One, the match. Your thoughts. Two, did they go more than they needed to do? I know it's the old kind of Scott Keith argument in his review on this one. He felt they could have toned things down, still been good enough with the story of Sean's back, that they really didn't need to go so balls out and kind of take away from the main event. And what did you think? Did you think Sean was going to wrestle again after this match?
Okay. Number one, it's one of my five favorite matches of all time. It's 5 stars for me. Number two, I love Scott now. I used to, you know, I've always been back and forth on his opinions. And the next time we have him on, I might want to call him out on this because I don't think you can't amp up and down a match. Like, you can't tell guys, look, guys, you can't tell. First of all, you can't tell if you're going to do that. You don't tell these two guys this.
Well, I don't think guys, he was saying you
like
can't amp 65%. It up. I think he was just saying you don't need the weapons and the brawling and the blood. Like, you could have told a great story with Triple H just working Sean's back. Like, his point was the comeback was enough. Like, Sean wrestling this match, even existing to wrestle this match with all the shit he had been through, the injury, the drugs, the pills, everything else. Just the fact that he's in this match and Triple H is working his back was enough. I think that's Keith's point. That you didn't need the you know, dog and pony show around it.
Probably.
Well,
but I'm not.
I'll say this. I think Keith may be right when you look at that time, on that night. But looking back at the match, like, it was an awesome match. Like, I probably wouldn't change anything. Maybe on that night, if his review was that night, which I think it was, I could see why you would maybe think, all right, they didn't really need to do all this. You know, you're worried about the rest of the card and the guys being pretty. Yeah, you know, you're worried about a lot more in the moment than you are now. Now you just want to see a great match. So
right. But so I guess my personal opinion is I don't think you can amp up and down. That's just my opinion. Maybe you could have just had a straight up singles match. But, you know, it's Sean. If Sean asks for it, you're not going to turn him down if that was his idea. Number three, if it was, he went out the way he wanted to. And what cracks me up is, and we talked about it, and go check out our episode of our WrestleMania 14 vault. The match with Steve was not that bad anyway. Was it this?
No. He needed to go out on a better note, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fine, but yeah, he didn't know it was his last match. He was so fucked up and
a
douche. Like, he needed this iconic match to go out on.
This was incredible. I remember wanting to go to this show, and it sold out so quick, and then the tickets were just, the few that were available, the tickets were ridiculous. They were like $400 or whatever. What I did after the match is I looked something up.
I don't want to know.
No. This is more spiritual than. I'm going to read you something. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. That was the verse on Sean's tank top. Philippians chapter 4, verse 13. And.
Wait, read that again?
I can do all things through him who gives me strength.
Time to play the game!
And
you missed the last verse there.
That's not in the Torah. If you're going to take a time capsule of
Jesus that never came back,
spectacular matches in the history of this business, you put that one in there. Can you comfortably say that? Obviously, watching the DVDs and going through history, Sean only trusted Hunter to give him this match because he was a little nervous about his health and that kind of thing. Meanwhile, Sean just... it's like Hunter's like, I'll take care of him. Don't worry about it. And he freaking buries him with those backbreakers. But in the end, like he always did, Sean gave Hunter his best match of the year.
Yep. And the match felt it felt like a guy having his last match.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It did. It felt like a guy going all out to have his last match.
Let me ask you this.
I'm leaving it on the table. This is it. And I thought it was really impressive that he wasn't hesitant or jumpy at all. Like, he went out there and just let loose, and I thought that was the most impressive part of it.
Let me ask you this. Maybe not the going all out part. We won't talk about the levels that, but 27 minutes and 20 seconds. Was it too long?
Yeah, I thought the end with the ladder, and I mean, the table spot was fine, but when Hunter kind of made that second comeback and they started fighting with the ladder, like, it felt like maybe 5 minutes too long.
Okay.
Like, I think 22 probably would have been.
I would have been fine. I'll compromise on it. I don't think they should have amped it down, but they probably could have cut back about 5 or 6 minutes and given it to the next match.
Right. That's well, not even that. Just anywhere but this.
Right.
Redistribute it throughout the card. I just thought it just felt like I was ready for it to end, and then we had to go through another few minutes. That's all.
Right. Not much more you could say.
No, it was fantastic. I mean, a legendary match, and one that if it was Sean's last match would have been
perfectly
fitting in. Right. Yep. And we'll see. Obviously it's not. We'll talk about it many more times throughout these reviews, and it ends up being one of the most shocking stories to me in a long time over the next few months.
Yes. And obviously the end with Hunter hitting him with the sledge and all that stuff, obviously you realize this was probably not going to be his last match. But unless that was taking him out for good, if that was the way, you could have thought it that way too.
Right.
Whew. I believe it's on. I don't have our good friend Graham's historywwe.com up, but it's on one of the two.
It's on a lot of things.
Yeah. It's on one of the two
from
sets.
The vault. Shawn Michaels from the vault.
Is it really? I didn't even know that came out by then. Yeah, I guess it did. It's probably on the My Journey, either My Journey or Heartbreak and Triumph. It's probably one of those two. All right. Time now for our
main event. We have a segment before that.
Oh, we have the segment with the Fink, yeah.
Fink vamps a bit to cool the crowd down. Shit talks baseball, because remember, it seemed like they may be going on strike in 2002.
That's right.
Trish comes out looking hot. Fink had been doing the anti-woman shtick, caused all the Long Island skanks. Trish teases him with, Fink gets an awesome line about, your puppies and my wiener. Funk, I thought Fink was really funny here. A decent time filler to set the crowd up for the main event. Lillian comes out, gets her revenge. She smacks and low blows Fink. And you get the girls their revenge on Fink, who had been doing the sexist thing for a while with Lillian. So Fink saying anything is actually another one on the next show, too. But Fink saying anything weird in his announcer voice is awesome. So
yes, I agree. I definitely agree with that.
Okay.
Now
it's main event time.
Now we get to the main event. The WWE Undisputed Championship on the line. Your champion. Last time I'll be saying it for a while. The Rock. Who, of course, won it at Vengeance. Taking on the guy who got the number one contender slot, courtesy his King of the Ring tournament victory back in June.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I get to do the voice in the same match. Brock Lesnar. We kind of knew the build, JR, but anything more between Vengeance and now?
Sure. Rock had won the Undisputed title from The Undertaker, like you said. Lesnar earned the shot at mm-hmm. King of the Ring. The feud really got cooking on the August 1st SmackDown, when Lesnar distracted Rock during a tag team match, allowing Chris Benoit to pick up a submission win on the champion. The following week, Brock took on Hulk Hogan and defeated him cleanly and definitively with a bear hug.
What?
After the match, Brock hammered Hogan with a chair, busting him open, took some of the blood and smeared it on his chest. It was a big-time win for Lesnar, and the image of Brock with Hogan's blood on his chest would become one of his most famous. That match would be the last time we see Hulk Hogan until early 2003, Scott, because he walked off due to some... he was supposed to take time off after this match anyway,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll talk about in a couple of months some issues he had backstage that led to him walking for a bit. So the old Hogan kind of rears his head here as we hit the fall.
It sucks, because what a role, you know?
And that match at SmackDown was really fun, too, with Brock, and... that was actually for the number one contender match. This match here was on the line, so Hogan was fighting for the title shot. The following week, Brock picked up another dominant win over Rikishi, and the show ended with a stare down between him and The Rock. While the build-up was basic, the real story was told expertly done video packages. The packages highlighted Rock and Brock training at home, putting over their strategies and athletic backgrounds. We saw Rock training in Miami, running the steps at the University of Miami, training in the gym, while Brock was training up in the hills in Minnesota. Really well done, and made the match feel special, like a legitimate major title fight that a lot of people were just in love with at the time. And it's something you didn't really see a lot with Rock before this. Like that real sports build, and you almost forget his athletic background because he's so into like the comedy shit all the time, you know, or the sports entertainment style of thing. You almost forget how legit of an athlete he was. So I thought it was really cool to see them busted out for this match here. No better time to do it than now.
Yes. And I was thinking, was it that clear cut who was going to win this match? Probably.
Yes.
I think that's why they now you figure out why Rock, like out of nowhere, won the title at Vengeance. He was, for the first time in his career, he was nothing more than a transition. It's amazing in this 5-month stretch, JR, how huge Brock had gotten over.
Mm-hmm.
And he had got some, now we're in New York. This is his first kind of legit New York show. I know they were at the Garden at one point during the summertime, but this was his first look in the legit, you know, Northeast hotbed.
Mm.
And as expected, fans loved him.
Oh, yeah.
Big face pops here.
Just going back to your question before about, you know, was it obvious? I mean, I don't think it was super obvious. Like, it was, but there was always a slight chance Rock could maybe win because it's Rock. But, I mean, I don't think you could conceive coming this far with Brock Lesnar and not having him finish the job. And I think word was out that Rock was going back to Hollywood after this as well, that he was only here to make Brock Lesnar. So, I'd say it was probably about as obvious as you can get, with maybe just a twinkle of doubt just in case they tried to swerve anything.
Right. Yeah. The match... it was interesting. It was unique because, you know, if you go back through Rock's history, particularly in his title matches, didn't never faced a guy like Brock before.
No,
that
definitely
kind of
not.
Size. I mean, Taker, but Taker doesn't wrestle like Brock.
No, not even close.
Even though he's bigger, you know?
I guess Angle would probably be the closest. But did you like the choice to stack these matches?
Yeah.
I do, because I think anything else after Shawn, Triple H probably would have died.
Yeah,
I think it's the only thing that could keep the crowd going.
Yeah, I think... Yeah. I know people probably were getting that... going back briefly to the Shawn Triple H match, I think, but this goes in concert with both. I almost think that they were getting nervous they were going to get a repeat of WrestleMania where Rock Hogan completely diluted the crowd and gassed him, and then by the time we got to Triple H Jericho, everybody was sunk. Difference there was like, what, three matches in between? Or two matches in between Rock Hogan and Triple H Jericho? Something like that.
Right. Was it just the women's? There might have been two.
It might have been the women's. I'm thinking one more, maybe. Yeah, the tag, I think, right? With Bully and Chuck?
I think we thought it was, but it wasn't.
Maybe not. In any event, the Fink thing was not enough to really totally gas this crowd or you know, let them refill their cooler jets a little bit.
It was only the women's after Rock.
Okay, so they had a little bit of time. But that was different. I mean, Hogan's first match in the company in, you know, 9 years, and that was different. Although, maybe not so different. Shawn back after 4.5 years, Hogan back after 9 years. Pretty close. The difference here was Brock was the mitigating factor here. And it's funny how Triple H and Rock switch spots now. Brock was the mitigating factor here because unlike the main event at 18 where, you know, Triple H and Jericho already established guys and, you know, you kind of know how the match is going to be and the build was pretty shitty. Here you've got a fresh, brand new guy and a pretty good build because, let's be honest, I mean, they've pumped him up as absolutely unbeatable. Yep. He was a total brick shithouse. So I think this situation's a little different because, you know, the Mania title match was, you know, Triple H's vindication, come back from the pop quad, and, you know, the whole Jericho and Stephanie and the fucking dog and the shampoo and all of the shit. But here is very different. And I think that there was plenty left in the tank. The Nassau crowd was totally geeked.
Right.
And I really enjoyed the match. I think Rock really adapted to a guy who, he's not used to facing dudes this big. I mean, you have Big Show and Taker, but those guys wrestle a wrestling style, like that sports entertainment-y style.
Yeah.
Brock has that. Kurt is a great, that's a great example, JR. Same kind of
bigger
thing.
Bigger Kurt.
Yeah, bigger Kurt, plus, you know, 45 pounds or whatever.
And to go with the changing of the guard theme, too, with this match, you also have Michael Cole and Taz calling it. First time it's not King and, you know, JR calling a main event, so that was cool too. That almost felt like the ushering of a new era because Cole and Taz were kind of suited more towards this style of real athletic competition and not as sports entertainment-y, which is funny because JR always was, like, you know, more fitting for this. But Cole and Taz I thought were a great fit and they really blended nicely with this style that was coming on SmackDown.
All right.
Smartly set up towards Brock Lesnar's strengths, no BS, straight up. End of Hogan's run, as we mentioned, was sad. Big match feel. Rock was all fired up. He charges the ring, but Lesnar eats him up immediately, right out of the gate. He manhandles him. Crowd turns on the Rock immediately as well. Not even for a second there. Mm. Brock targets the ribs, was focused and stiff in his attack. Lesnar hits a suplex assault in full effect. Rock had very little offense. Brock was a machine. Was ready for this moment completely. Good commentary, get over the strategy, and a crisp call. It felt like a true changing in the guard as the match was going on. You could feel everything changing as the match ebbed. Crappy sharpshooter one more time from The Rock, of course. Brock goes to the bear hug and wrestles Rock to the mat to grind it in. Match that made Brock Lesnar a star is officially underway. Crowd fully behind him. His ascension moment was here. Heyman's interference backfires. They brawl on the floor. I didn't think that was completely needed. Heyman gets a Rock Bottom to the table, which is good to take him out, get him out of the way. Brock needed to win this one on his own, and he does. Kicks out of an awesome Rock Bottom, and then cuts off Rock's final offense and finishes clean with an F5. Tremendous finish. The new era is now official. It's a smart that one F5 got it done. I'm glad they didn't have Rock kick out of it at all. New king of the company's in place. A great match that made Brock a star. Rock has done his job. He can leave now. No Paul Heyman at the end, just Brock standing alone in the end to an awesome show. Mm. I love this match. I love the build to it. I love the style. Yep. I like that Brock won it clean. Once with his finisher, we didn't get the Attitude Era, you know, version of 15 different finishers before.
Yeah, and hitting each other's finishers and
right. I really liked the way it went, and I thought it made Brock an instant star.
Yep. And it added another layer to The Rock, which he would take advantage of when he came back because of this match, which makes it even better. Top five pay per view of all time.
To this point.
Yes.
Yes, I think so, easily.
Best SummerSlam ever?
to this
best
point.
Best SummerSlam to this point.
Yes.
Better than 18? I'd
better
say
than
yes.
WrestleMania 18? Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic show. I mean, like we said, the worst match is Taker Test, and even that's probably at least around 2-star mark. So,
right,
you have two fantastic matches, arguably both probably around 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
You have a great RVD Benoit match, one of the best wrestling openers of all time. You have Eddie Edge. Eddie Edge is like the sixth best match on this card.
I know,
which is amazing. And I mean, even the tag match. So, yeah, just a loaded show, a loaded roster. It really makes you look forward to what was coming in the fall. I mean, if this was the work rate we were going to get, then it made you feel like the company was going to be fine. I thought it was a really exciting time. The brand split was working. You had two very different feeling shows. You had SmackDown with all the athleticism and the guy like Brock Lesnar working mainly over there. And then you had all the other guys on the undercard, Benoit and Eddie. And over on Raw, you still had some good work rate, but you also had a lot of the big names as well. So right. I thought it was a really nice dichotomy they've set up here between the two shows. I thought they really did well with it. I thought they built up nicely with the GMs. I thought they made two good choices of GM. We didn't talk a lot about them. They were on throughout the show, but we'll talk more next week because they're both on a lot at Unforgiven, and that's when you really start to see their strengths come out. And I thought they were actually, at the time, Steph seemed like a weird choice, but I think she actually ends up being okay. Bischoff, I thought, was a fantastic choice, and we'll see that next month.
He's such a scheming sleazeball. Yeah.
Oh, he really is fantastic in the role. So.
Yep.
We'll get to that, but I thought the company was really clicking on all cylinders, and I thought this is easily one of the best pay-per-views of all time.
I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think you're going to see many shows with this complete an undercard.
Right. You may not have the heights of WrestleMania 17 or the importance, but match for match, I think it's better. I mean, 17 had a couple fart matches in there. You know, this had none. This was really solid from top to bottom.
Yep. And like I said, every match... We're not saying every match was 5-star work rate. We're just saying that every match had something that you were invested in as a fan and a viewer that hooked you, whether it was the work rate like RVD and Benoit, or the story like Shawn and Triple H, which ended up being a complete package, or what you were going to think of Brock or Flair or, you know, obviously Ray and Ed. I mean, just everything had something. And that ended up making it probably the best SummerSlam of all time to this point. And now makes it, what, 6 straight years of great SummerSlams. We really haven't had a SummerSlam stinker since 96, really.
Right, yep.
So there you have it. SummerSlam 02, highly recommend it. Click on the network. It's right there.
Tons of fun.
Yes.
Great show. Definitely worth a rewatch for you.
Absolutely.
All right, Scott. That is it for us here tonight, and it for this week for us. Yes. Wednesday night we have episode, we have 10, 11?
11.
11, jeez. Of the Kevin Kelly Show on the main event.
What do we have? What does K-Squared have this week?
We have Bobby Fish in the house. One half of Red Dragon.
Yes.
A great competitor and a really good talker. So that should be a really fun interview with him and Kevin. They have some good chemistry together. And we'll be talking about what happened at Payback. We'll talk about what's going on in Ring of Honor. We'll talk about the NBA Finals, I'm sure, and the other news. And maybe we'll do a little more sleaze game. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Who's up on deck for main event? I heard you may have a very big guest in the house.
We have a very special... we may end up having the Core 4 plus 1. We may really jack the show up if both... somebody's going to sit out. But if not, the Core 4 may be there. But joining them, JR? Purveyor of the history, WWE.com, Mr. Graham Cawthon.
Get out of here.
Yes,
Graham.
Yes.
There you go. Big time.
GC will be joining us on the main event this week. So
that's cool. That'll be fun.
Very much looking forward to it. We're going to talk about... Obviously, Payback, and apparently Raw's had a huge thing go on tonight as well. And I want to get into that big story about the Savage documentary, the big story the DVD coming out, because apparently they're going to address the whole Stephanie thing. So I want to talk to Graham about that. So, yeah, definitely big show this week. So two big shows this week, Kevin Kelly and main event.
And next Monday, we'll be back with Unforgiven, and another big show next Wednesday, Scott Keith returns. We're going to do another mailbag, so...
Oh, super.
We'll be right back.
Love that.
To doing that. So there you go. There's your next couple weeks here at PlaceMeNation.com. If you have any other questions, just hit us up on Facebook.com/PlaceMeNation, at Twitter, Place2BNation, or info@PlaceMeNation.com. So for Scott Criscolo, I am Justin Rosero. We'll talk to you all next Monday. Until then, enjoy the rest of what we have to offer. Thank you for your patronage, and I hope you all enjoyed this show and enjoy everything we churn out each and every week for you. Take care.
Morty.
He said churn.
Getting out of this parking lot.
Oh, we're going to be here forever.
Wasting gas.
Why did The Rock have to wrestle that match?
30-minute backup on the LIE.
champagne is not for free. SOPC is killing me, so desperately I'll sing the other love. Shove it off, so raging pain and pain and fear itself. And I can't keep these feelings on the shelf. I try it, well, no, like a lie. The people are just suicide, but I got too much pride inside to hide or slide. I'll do it on the side and let it run until I die. And only then shall I abide, yes, by to catch a little tunes. I'll skip 3 minute ditties, I wanna bust all your balloons.